Today on episode 2 of the Out of Chicago podcast, we talk about the current state of mirrorless cameras, we have an interview with Detroit photographer Mike Boehning, and we talk about my favorite place in all of Chicagoland to shoot, and that is the Chicago Botanic Garden. So welcome back to the Out of Chicago podcast. We've got an episode I think you're really going to enjoy. We're going to talk about a couple of the most popular things in photography. Well, the most popular thing right now is probably mirrorless cameras. So we're going to talk about how I see the current state of mirrorless cameras. If you don't know, I just bought an Olympus EM10. I won't say that it's broken and at Olympus right now, although it is. We won't talk about that. But I did a lot of research looking up this camera, and I'm going to talk about kind of where I see everything and maybe give you an idea of which camera, which family of cameras might be best for you. We're also going to talk to one of the friends that I made on the workshop with Valerie Jardin, and that is Mike Boehning. He's from Detroit, which is actually my hometown, and he's going to talk about some of the best places to shoot if you were to visit Detroit. And Detroit's a great city. People think of it for, the abandoned buildings and everything, and he does all of that, but he does a lot of other stuff too. So I think you're really going to enjoy the interview with him. Detroit's not really that far away, 4.5-5 hours depending on where you are, and it makes a great weekend trip. So that'll be Mike Boehning. We'll talk to second. And then if there was only one place that I could shoot the rest of my life, one place for the whole time, it would be the Chicago Botanic Garden. So we're going to talk about the garden today. It's a spring, a great time to get there. We'll talk about some of my favorite things to shoot there. All right, so those are all the things. Let's get right into segment one, and that is the current state of mirrorless cameras. To me, there's really like four different families of cameras you're going to look at. It's Olympus, Panasonic, Fuji, and Sony. Those are the big ones. I know that Canon and Nikon make some, but I don't recommend, they're just not putting their money, they're not putting their effort into building a good quality mirrorless camera. I still think that something like the D800, the 5D Mark III, those are, a couple of the best cameras you could possibly own. But as far as getting something mirrorless, have the advantages of having something mirrorless, I think you stick with, like I said, Olympus, Panasonic, Fuji, or Sony. So we're going to talk about those. Real quick, if you haven't kind of kept up on this whole thing with mirrorless, the idea here is it gets rid of the mirror, and that makes it so that the light that comes into the camera comes through the lens, it hits directly onto the sensor, and you don't have this big mirror that's got to flip up. It makes it so that you can make the body smaller, and everything about it is smaller. So the mirrorless cameras have smaller lenses for the most part, and are a lot easier to handle in that way. But there's some disadvantages as well. They typically do not autofocus as well. And sometimes when you get these really small cameras, that's not good as far as the ergonomics and getting a good grip on the thing. So let's talk about these different families. The first one I want to talk about, I said I got the EM10 from Olympus. That's the most recent one. It's their smaller one. The EM1 is really considered to be their top-of-the-line camera right now. And that is a real good choice. It's more expensive, and it's a little bit better. Like, it's weather-sealed. Maybe it's a little bit faster frame rate, but pretty much the same thing as the EM10 that Olympus makes. Both these are considered the Olympus OMD EM10, OMD EM1. To me, Olympus is they're the smallest of all of them for the most part. Like, the EM10, super, super small. They are the fastest, they're the best handling cameras of all of them. They have the fastest autofocus. They have very, very easy controls in terms of once you have them set up to go from one thing to another. So in those regards, the Olympus cameras, I think, are the best. Their downfall is that of all of the sensors, they have the smallest sensors. Olympus and Panasonic, both of them, they use, you probably heard it, micro four-thirds sensors. It's the smallest sensor. It's half the width across and half the height of a full-frame camera. So that means that in low light, they're going to have the worst image quality, and overall, their image quality is just not as good as something that has a larger sensor. But it's still very, very good, It's just not quite what you're going to get from a full-frame camera or some of these other ones we're going to talk about. So that's Olympus. Panasonic also makes Micro Four Thirds cameras, and that's one of the big advantages of Olympus or Panasonic, is you can interchange the lenses. If you buy an Olympus camera, you can use the Panasonic lenses. It's a great advantage for those. And I didn't say that off the bat, but that's one of the big things that really swayed me toward the Olympus also, was there's so many different lenses to choose from, so many different kind of fun things to get, whether it's a tiny little prime or a nice zoom lens. They've got lots of different things. Whereas some of the other brands, Sony doesn't have very many lenses at all. Fuji has, they've come out with a few more now, but maybe it's like 8 or 10 lenses total, whereas between Olympus and Panasonic, you're looking at 30 or 40 or maybe more lenses to choose from. You can choose kind of more of those niche lenses that you're not going to see with the Fuji. So with Panasonic, the two main ones I think you'd be looking at would be like the GX7 for a very small light mirrorless camera, and that's a very good one. And the latest thing for Panasonic is the GH4, and that's the one that can shoot the 4K video. You used to think that like 1080p was good. Well, then it's not good anymore. Now you have to shoot the 4K video. And so if you're, bottom line for Panasonic, if you're into video, Panasonic is the one you want to get. All right, so how about Fuji? Well, this is the camera I almost bought, was the X-T1. The Fuji X-T1, it kind of took all the things that they've been building up. You've heard of like the X100S. It was a fixed lens camera, great image quality, a fantastic camera. And then they built like the X-E1, X-E2, and they were both very good, but their autofocus was terrible. I mean, I used the X-E2, and the autofocus, it's just, you know, it'd be great if you're shooting landscapes, but if you're shooting anything where you needed a fast autofocus at all, you didn't want it. But the X-T1, the new one, really improved on that, and that's a great camera. And when my current Olympus died during, when I wanted to use it for the Chicago workshop with Valerie Jardin, I had to borrow someone's X-T1. Thank you very much, Brian, for the X-T1. And it is a great camera. The problems with it are, first the good things. It has probably the best combination of all the features for any mirrorless camera you can think of. Its image quality is phenomenal. Fuji is known for producing great JPEGs, and just the RAW files are amazing. It uses an APS-C size sensor, meaning it's somewhere in between a full frame and the Micro Four Thirds. So the image quality, especially for a mirrorless camera, is excellent. It's you can't ask for much more than that. So the X-T1 is great in terms of the image quality. To me, the downfall is that it's really big. I mean, when you put a regular size, their lenses are much bigger than the Olympus and Panasonic ones. So when you take an X-T1, which is already bigger and heavier than those, and then you put a bigger and heavier lens onto it, really, if you compare the size of the X-T1 with, say, the I was using like a 23mm prime. If you compare that size to like a Rebel with an 18-55 that I would have started out with, it's about the same size. And the image quality maybe is a little bit better. I almost think in some ways you just go with the Rebel. But what I'm trying to get at here is that the X-T1, it's big. It's not huge. It definitely is nicer than carrying a full frame like a 5D Mark III around, but it is, it's big. It's big for a mirrorless camera, much bigger than those Olympus cameras. So then the fourth family is the Sony family, and the ones I'll concentrate on are the ones that are out. That's the A7 and the A7R. There is an A7S, which has a small megapixel count and a really high ISO, it's like 400,000 something that it goes to, crazy. It also does 4K video, but I want to concentrate on the A7 and especially the A7R. The A7R is the 36 megapixels. If you are shooting landscapes, oh man, as far as a mirrorless camera, this is the one to get. A7R, 36 megapixels. And with an adapter, you can put on Nikon and Canon lenses. Now that's very intriguing. But the thing that I think that keeps me from getting it is that even if the camera is smaller, the lenses that I'm putting on it are just as big. And so to me, in the end, I may as well just stick with the camera that I have. And I don't think that getting those extra megapixels are really going to help that much. So to me, here's how you lay it all out between those four families of cameras. If you're looking for video, it's Panasonic. If you're looking for the smallest, fastest, like the furthest thing from a DSLR, it's the Olympus. So for me, that was it because I've got a great DSLR and I wanted to add something to it that would complement it and have all the advantages that the DSLR doesn't have. That's the Olympus. On the other hand, if I were to sell all my Canon stuff and start fresh and I said I'm going to go all mirrorless, I'd get the Fuji X-T1, and I know a lot of photographers that have done that. We had Bill Fortney in a few weeks ago, and he came and talked to us for an Out of Chicago talk. If you missed it, you missed out. He was amazing. But Bill Fortney, he got rid of all of his Nikon stuff. He's got a Fuji X-T1. He's got like four lenses that go with it, and that's all he needs. It's the best combination of everything. It's a fantastic camera, and it's a little bit heavier, but if that's what you're having instead of everything else, it's awesome. And if I were going to choose and get out of the Canon stuff, that's what I'd do. It's the X-T1 and some of the great lenses to go along with that. And then the Sony, if you really are serious about trying to keep your stuff small and yet you want like 36 megapixels, so especially like if you're shooting Canon, like I have a Canon 6D with the 17 millimeter tilt shift, that really is intriguing to maybe get the 36 megapixels with that. I mean, there's no Canon combination that has that many megapixels that you can use with those nice lenses like that. So I can kind of see that, but in the end, what do you gain? It's a tiny bit smaller, and you get extra megapixels. I mean, in the end, that's not going to make better photos for you. Well, really, are any of these going to make better photos? No, but they could make it so that you shoot in a different way. To me, the EM10 allows me to shoot in a way that I couldn't shoot with the 6D. It allows me into places where people are like, oh, it's just a tourist. He's got a point and shoot. Ah, no big deal. Where when I walk in with my 6D and, you know, big lenses and a backpack and everything, you don't get that. So to me, it was the Olympus because it's the smallest, it's got the best autofocus, and it really is a lot of fun to shoot. So that's what you're looking at. I think that's the current state. I know there's more out there. To me, those are the real winners. That's where you want to be looking as of right now in May of 2014. So segment two, this one's going to be really fun. I had a great time interviewing Mike Baining. He's from the Detroit area. He shoots all over Detroit. I met him at the Chicago workshop a few weeks ago, and he's a real good guy, and he knows all those great places to shoot in Detroit. I'm trying to plan a trip myself to go there this summer. I'm looking forward to meeting up with Mike and going to some good places. It's going to be a lot of fun. But we talked today about a few places that most people hadn't heard of and are going to be a little bit different than what you might think you'd be doing when you went to Detroit. So here it is, Mike Baining and Detroit Photography. Welcome, Mike Baining, to the Out of Chicago podcast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's great, Chris. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, I met Mike last weekend, actually, or maybe on Facebook before that, but met Mike on the street photography workshop in Chicago here with Valerie Jardin, and we had a great time. Mike's a great shooter, and it was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, that sure was. Boy, it really opened your eyes, I think, for what street photography is, and learning from Valerie was pretty special because she's got a different feel to it, different look.
Mm-hmm. You know? And the people that were on the workshop too were all excellent photographers.
Yeah, it's what I found by other workshops I've attended too, but this one especially, it's very accomplished photographers. Boy, when you sat down and looked at some of their portfolios or galleries on their own websites, we are really, you know, within a group of very good photographers.
Yeah, I was planning on going there and being, you know, kind of showing off, I'm from Chicago, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, look, kind of shrunk back then, some really good photographers. So, Mike, you're from Detroit, and that's my Detroit area, my original hometown, too. And Mike's going to tell us a little bit about some of his favorite places to shoot in and around Detroit. But first, just tell me some of the types of photography that you do, Mike.
Yeah, mainly I started probably 4 or 5 years ago really doing a lot of sports. I was shooting for a couple colleges, doing some basketball, some baseball games, and I still do that here and there, but giving up a little bit more of that and really gone after more of the urban style. Certainly urban exploring has been real big with me. Some street photography, and then doing a lot of landscape because I travel in my, we'll call it my normal job, the mortgage paying job. So when I do that travel, I'm always adding a day or two on to go across and find some, neat places throughout the United States, which is a lot of fun too. So, yeah. A lot of city photography though, I would say overall.
Yeah, and looking through your photos, you've got some amazing things. Like you said, the urbex and just some of the city stuff. Really fantastic. And some of your street shots that I saw from last weekend, amazing as well. So let's see. Tell us, this is, I mean, most of the reason I'm doing this is for myself personally. Tell me, your favorite places in Detroit to go shoot.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a great question because I think everybody could probably get up, on the web and check out places to shoot in Detroit or those types of things. But when you start to look inside and see the other hidden gems, I'll call them, maybe I can give you a couple of those.
Excellent.
I think that would be great. To start off with, there's a Ford. It's called the Ford Paquette Avenue Plant, and it's a museum for the Model Ts. They only open up spring and summer and a little bit into fall, but because there's no heat in the building, because it is the original building that they started the Model Ts in, and they've got they offer tours during the week and on the weekends, but what we do is I also do some work with Discover Your World photography tours out here. It's a meetup group, and we're able to get in after hours, and that's the gem of it.
That's the key.
That's the key. The thing shuts down about 5 o'clock, and they'll let us in for 3 to 4 hours. And the building is being restored. It is restored in areas. It's not restored in others, which is sharp as well to take some images. But it's full of old Model Ts and models prior to the Model Ts that Henry Ford built. And collector's items, and they'll let you have free reign of the building, obviously, that you're not allowed to jump in the cars or anything, or try to take one away, but they will let you go through the whole thing. And the way the building was built, because it is so old, they didn't have electricity when it was first built, so it's got just a huge wall of windows that they used to light the building with in the morning, so you've got a great sunset when it's a clear evening coming in there onto the old cars. Just some fantastic sunset shots onto these cars. And then as soon as it goes to night, of course they've got lights in there now, but they'll shut a lot of the lights off and allow us to come in and do some light painting, some night photography. You're allowed to bring flashes, tripods, whatever you need. And
as long as you're with your group, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's probably, I think our groups are going about 10 of us usually will go in there. So, and it's two floors, so there's certainly enough room, not a lot of people jumping in your shot. Tripods, external flashes, whatever you need. I've even seen a couple of people bring a model with them to do some shots. Which was pretty sharp as well. So that's sort of a hidden gem, and not a lot of people go.
I never even heard of it. That's really cool. Where is it?
It's on Paquette Avenue, which is in a in an area where definitely a few abandoned buildings. I'm sitting there. I see how my mind thinks. It's going right to the abandoned building locations. but it's actually, when you drive into the building, they actually have a gated parking area within the building, so it's nice in the evening you don't have to worry about if you're parking on the streets, am I safe, am I not safe, you know, what's around the area.
Yeah, right.
So I think that, and then they stay with you too, because the people that actually are there that would take you on the tours and such are there to answer questions. And, you know, sometimes I've seen guys get there and not do much photography and just talk to them about cars.
Oh, well, that's cool. You know, that's a good one. If you like the old cars, that's a great one, it sounds like.
And actually, even there's some old four GTs in there. He's got a couple Mustangs. If you talk to the guy, if you talk him into it and let you go into the basement, they've got some old hearses down there that we've set up some flashes inside and taken some pretty cool, you know, night shots inside a hearse like that.
Yeah, I bet. You know? Yeah.
But that's definitely one. One that we came upon this year is the Detroit Public Library. I mean, certainly people have gone into it. Mm-hmm. I went to college down at Wayne State, probably spent a few skipped classes in the library, hanging out in the library at that time. But never saw it this way probably when I was in college. But
Wait a minute. Did you say you would skip classes and you'd go to the library?
Yeah, one or two. Yeah, I know. That was the cool place to hang out then, though.
Oh, okay.
It was well before the internet and everything.
Say most people, when they skip classes, they don't head to the library. I don't know. Okay. Yeah,
maybe it's just one class. But the tours, they'll take you on a tour, and this year they started letting you bring in tripods.
Really?
And that. And just the vastness of the granite and the architecture of that building, the grand area when you walk in, they'll let you bring the tripods right throughout the people that are sitting in there, and you can get some great shots of some, you know, old books along the way, you know, bookshelves, card catalogs. It sounds funny, but not too many people remember card catalogs anymore to find books.
Right.
But they... allowing you to bring in the tripod certainly is an interesting thing, because the building is not lit that well, so you do find yourself bracketing a lot in there. And it's great for fisheye with the huge round ceilings if you're a fisheye guy.
Well, you know I am, yeah.
Yeah. and I get I sometimes get caught up in that, and then I wonder, I get back from the shoot, I'm going, did I have another lens, or could I just use this the whole time?
I know. That's happened to me a bunch, yes.
Yeah, but that Detroit Public Library is another one.
It's got, like, murals. It's got some really cool staircases, huge. Right?
It would definitely remind you of the Detroit Institute of Arts, which,
right,
of course, a lot of people will go around and see. But it's got the same feel, but it's just not as busy. So that's the tours go off early in the morning, 10 a.m. And they're only for an hour or so, but they'll allow you to shoot a good 2 hours in there.
So you really, for a photographer, you really recommend the tour then?
Yeah, you really have to take the tour. I don't know if you could walk right in and just start setting up if you weren't with a few people on that tour. And it's worth it because you get to learn some of the history of the grand entrance rooms and that as well, which is pretty nice. So those are inside. An outside one that I would definitely take somebody to is the Hart Plaza, what we used to call, and you'd remember as the Rensen, of course, but it's really the GM World Headquarters.
Now. Oh, of course. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But the Renaissance Center, it's probably the most famous thing known for Detroit as far as what the cityscape looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
But we now have a river walk along there.
You know, I've heard that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the river walk is interesting because they've extended it down, and it's going all the way now to Belle Isle, which is a pretty good distance, you know, if you're not exactly sure where that's it, but it's a well over a mile walk with some horse carousels, some rides, cityscape shots. Those are always great, but there's also a place next to the GM World Headquarters called Hart Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fountains. And where I would say to go here is this is definitely a morning walk here because of the sun rising coming up, you know, over Windsor. You get some great shots of the city, and the sun will be between the huge pillars of the GM World Headquarters. You can catch it, you know, right in between a couple of the pillars along those fountains. And probably another thing very famous for Detroit, people may have seen it, is the large Joe Louis fist.
The fist, yes.
Uh-huh. You got to go up and get a fist, and you, it's like one of those things that everyone will take a picture of in the city, but there's just got to be another way to get a picture, you know, just a different angle.
It's Detroit's bean.
Yes, it is. It is Detroit's bean, and it's in the middle of traffic. That's the only problem, is you do have to jump out into the little bit into the median to get the shot,
mm-hmm.
if you're going to get close. But yeah, there is a lot of action around the Joe Louis fist, and just across the street from that is the symbol of Detroit with the city symbol of Detroit that they'll, you know, depending right, if the right. wings or the no, Tigers
they're,
were.
They're not going to have any wings jerseys on it right now.
No,
I know.
They're not. you know, they'll put a huge jersey on the Spirit of Detroit. And so you can pick up all those on that photo walk. So that's definitely a nice one.
That's a great walk. You recommend that for a morning then, huh?
Yeah, that would be a morning shoot. In fact, it'd be a nice morning to do that and, you know, even jump over later in the evening and hit the, you know, the Paquette Ford plant there with the Model T's. That way you can't find a lot, we all know, in that hard sun sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So take a couple hours off, you know, you could even go see the Tigers play and hit the Ford plant after that.
Right.
That would be real nice. Couple other ones, but these are more specific, I think, to dates. But something which is very nice from the standpoint of if you're a fireworks shooter and you want to get some excellent cityscapes with the fireworks, and that's our Freedom Festival that we put on in combination with Windsor, you know, of course, just
right.
across the Detroit River is the other country there, Canada.
Yep.
And so the only thing I would recommend, and a lot of people love to take the fireworks shots and they'll stand on the Detroit side, is I would get out of Detroit to take those, and that's what I've done, is you go over to Windsor.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The best skyline shots of Detroit are from Canada,
from
right?
Windsor. Exactly. So mm-hmm. make sure you have your passport, because you can't get over the Ambassador Bridge without it. Or if you're in Michigan, you can have an enhanced license. That'll help. But the Freedom Festival is so large, it's that you need to get over 6 or 7 hours before the actual, you know, fireworks take off, just to get yourself a good spot on the Windsor side. But what they do is they have huge rocks that jut out from the shore of Windsor about 20 feet into the water, and you want to find yourself a nice flat rock to get onto, and then you'll be in front of all the crowds
for 6 or 7 hours.
No, you just get yourself the spot.
Okay.
Put your chair there, go sit on the shoreline. You know, get some stuff to eat. They got vendors going around all day. But as you're sitting out there, the night, the sun sets and the sun's going down right over Detroit. Get some great sunset shots on that side of the border. And then when the fireworks start, of course, they're huge. And one of the biggest, I think the fifth biggest show in the United States. So it is an amazing feat.
I know, it's a good show, yeah. Yeah, the last time I was there, I remember we went for the Red Bull Air Races, I think was the last time they did it there. That was a lot of fun to shoot.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely, those are sharp too, going over the Detroit River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's one other place, but unfortunately they just tore it down. It was, and this had a little bit of urban exploring and July 4th mixed in. But the Brewster Projects, which was maybe Chicago's version there of Cabrini Green.
Sure, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Brewster Projects are coming down, actually, in the next probably month now. But you could get on top of those. You could get shots of Comerica Park, Ford Field, and the cityscape with the fireworks going off behind it. It's amazing. But so, unfortunately, those are now coming down. They were a great place to shoot the fireworks for that. But the fireworks this year, because it is not on July 4th, if anyone needs to know, it is June 23rd.
Good to know.
This coming year, yep. And then one other one I'd recommend is an outdoor, just a little bit of a different scene, is that Woodward Dream Cruise. And I know we talked about it.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Yeah, that Woodward Dream Cruise, August 16th. In fact, I looked today. I wanted to get some specific details. And I guess they call it the largest one-day automotive event in the world.
They called it the world's largest traffic jam, no?
Yeah, that too, especially where you were from.
Yeah.
1.5 million people attended the thing last year, and 40,000 classic cars. It's an amazing, it's a one-day event that people talk about, but the tip on all this is really not to, you can certainly shoot on the one day, the Saturday that it's on August 16th. On that Saturday, what I shoot would be people. Mm-hmm. I would go out and try to capture people because the cars are tough to get by. Everyone is so packed in, but the people watching and people shooting is definitely worth it. It's the days prior, though, is the real tip on this one, is you need to get out there from, the thing actually starts happening from Monday night, and it's about 18 miles worth of cruising.
Yep.
All the way from Pontiac to Ferndale, but from Wednesday night on, it's a very lively place in the evening and the early nighttime, and with tripods out there, some nice long exposure shots of the cars.
That's a good idea.
That's what we captured last year. But you've got to get out. That's the big tip I think on that one, is to get out a little bit early and not try to do that on a Saturday, because 1.5 million people is going to be a little too much to get around.
Yeah, I want to say when they first started that, it went like a week or whatever. Was that all still unofficial? I don't know.
I think it was unofficial, but it shuts down the roads almost for the whole week.
Right, exactly.
It really does.
Exactly. And I think the big question listeners are wondering right now, and they're like, you haven't asked this yet, Chris, and that is, what about safety concerns as far as like... going out early in the morning to go down to do that walk that you're talking about, right, or any of these other things?
I think that's certainly a concern for probably most people, especially if you're coming from out of town and you may not be familiar with the surroundings. One thing I'd recommend is that you're with some others, like always, in any large city, whether it's Atlanta, LA, I'd make sure I'm with one or two people if you could be. And then look for things like the Discover Your World Photography workshops. I mean, we're out there, planning something really every week. All these things that we're talking about, we're doing there. But that certainly helps break some of those barriers down, because you've got some people that understand the area. But from a safety standpoint, the Hart Plaza, the Paquette area, very well patrolled. I mean, you're not going in amongst all the abandoned buildings or all the crime you may or may not have heard of.
Right.
Detroit. These are areas that are very well well lit, well established areas, especially along the riverfront, that I think anyone would feel safe, or just as safe in any major city, I would call it.
All right.
I don't think there's that. The only thing I would say is you'd be concerned about is if you're doing some urban exploring. Now that's a little bit different.
All right, let's talk about that. Yeah. Let's talk a little urbex.
Sure. Let's do that.
Maybe just give some tips for people that are new, or maybe someone that wants to come into Detroit and try and just like see what it's all about for the first time.
Yeah. And there's some great buildings. I probably won't go over any of those at this point, but certainly anybody that wants to email me or talk with me, I definitely would do that with you. But I would think that anything for someone that's new or maybe just has an interest in this urban exploring, because we find people like that all the time, and just a couple of things that what I would say are always good tips is, go with a group. Never, ever go alone into any of the neighborhoods. I really steer away from all houses. When we go in, it's buildings, it's industrial buildings, churches, those types of things. It's not anyone's homes that were abandoned or any of that.
Okay.
There are certain people that like to do that, but I would steer clear of any of that. And when I say go with a group, I would say a great size of a group is four, maybe no more than eight. If you were going to take, that'd be a pretty large group if you're going to a large industrial type site that might have been abandoned. You could probably go with eight. I've seen experienced urbexers forget things like this. Like, they'll bring a flashlight, but then they'll forget not to bring an extra battery, because that'll run out. Nobody has electricity. You need a flashlight. It doesn't matter if it's sunny. outside, I'm telling you, the places are dark. So
it's a little different than shooting on the Chicago Riverwalk.
It is. It's very much so.
Yeah.
You know, areas, we really try to avoid some areas that are very well marked with, hey, you're trespassing, you're on video, those types of things. You know, if there's heavy patrols, certainly we're not going through those areas. That you just, if you got to trust your instincts on those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cell phone charged, always wearing long pants, shirts. Don't, just because it's 90 degrees in the summer, you don't go urban exploring in flip flops and shorts.
Right.
The dangers inside the buildings are definitely there. You know, bring yourself a small little first aid kit. I think all of us have one on when we go out. You know, just keeping your senses about you, always testing floors, even the floors of the Packard, which are all made of probably 20 inches of cement, very, very tenuous. Those things will fall and have fallen through. So you have to be very careful that, you know, things that you're walking on in that area. But, you know, days of the week, again, this is a morning adventure, at least in Detroit. I would never say, you know, let's go out at sunset and try to do an abandoned building.
Oh, okay.
That's something you'd never catch me doing that or the group of people we go with. But, you know, we really do go very early in the morning. Always recommend hitting it 7 a.m., you know, or right when that sun rises that you're in the buildings. It seems the city's a little bit more quiet, not a lot of action in the neighborhoods. And, you know, you walk in quiet. As we always talk, and probably most people may have even seen, you know, you're leaving only footprints and taking only images.
Yeah.
You know, you're not taking things, you're not breaking things or being loud, and you move on. Because some of these buildings are amazing. Some of these churches are just absolutely amazing that they've gone to, you know, that they've, I guess, just the abandonment part of them and leaving and seeing them just rot away is really, it's tough, but at the same time you wonder, and it's good to go back. I always find for myself, it's good to go back and then really start searching the history of the buildings. So
right.
You can start to see, you know, things like St. Agnes Church in Detroit. It was Rosa Parks Church.
Mm.
You know, read about the things. The Grandy Ballroom in Detroit, you know, hosted the Led Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones. You know, Bob Seger, Alice Cooper, just amazing things. I actually have had somebody from writing a book on the Grateful Dead that has got some of my images in it from the Grandy Ballroom. They've superimposed some of the images from the actual concert and what it looks like today, almost like double exposures over them.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty sharp thing I thought that he put together, but... And then inside, of course, I think you'd bring a camera. That's what we're talking about. travel in light. I go very light on myself with things. Nice wide angle lens. Fisheye is always great. You're almost bracketing on every shot inside these buildings. And if you love HDR processing, you probably love abandonment.
Yes.
You know, so
you're taking a tripod on all these, is that right or not?
Tripod on every one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've gone into some without tripod, and, you know, I shoot mainly Olympus, so, you know, with that five-axis stabilization, you can do decent, you know, you can hold down almost to one full second. But when you're doing bracketing, you're going to have to do a lot more than that.
Yeah, bracketing inside, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then in some cases you're doing, if you got a couple flashlights and that, maybe you're doing some light painting as well.
Okay.
Inside these buildings. I wouldn't recommend breaking open the steel wool and, you know, firing
right.
up steel wool in these old abandoned buildings. I would not do that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
You don't want to be caught the guy that burned them down.
Right.
They will come after you for that kind of stuff, but
so it sounds like the number one tip is really to find a group that kind of knows where they're going, and so that you have someone to go with. Is that right?
Yeah, I would definitely say that is my number one. As inviting and as exciting as they may be for some people, and I've been out there, you know, in Atlanta, I've been out there, and I said I just want to go. I don't have anybody. You just got to me personally. You've got to avoid it. You just don't know what's lurking around those areas. And, you know, and it's not even so much of someone maybe coming after you as opposed if you get injured or hurt.
Right.
That's really more a thing because, quite honestly, I've been, you know, urban exploring and probably done 20 to 30 buildings a year, so maybe this last year 40. You know, from a homeless perspective, maybe 5 homeless people in all those buildings.
Okay.
It's not something you're really running into. It's more of the people I've been with, you know, have hurt themselves. I've had someone fall through a basketball court, you know, late last year in the winter. They're just walking and they just went through, you know, down to their knees. They were fine. But it's a scary thing. All of a sudden the person's going below when you're just walking. So
yeah. Jeez.
But it's part of that.
And when you see people in there, will they interact with you? Will they just
No, you know, we've if I've interacted with anyone, it's probably been in the cold of winter. If we've seen people in there, and you know, I'll usually have a few dollars in my front pocket if I need to give some money to somebody to see that they're okay. And you know, like I said, that's not very often. But no, there's been no interaction. I think the biggest interaction you probably get would be from maybe metal scrappers, and those guys you want to stay away from too.
Okay,
you don't want to be taking pictures of scrappers. They don't want to see.
They don't like the cameras, do they?
No, they just you move past them, you nod your head and move on.
Wow, that really sounds like an adventure. I've never done anything like it, and I don't know. What did you say the group was that you go with again?
It's Discover Your World Photography Tours. It's a meetup group now. There's a website that'll be coming out soon that'll be, you know, be a little bit more involved, and meetup groups doesn't have as much advantage to offering different things that we can. So I think that'll be happening in the next month or so on that website, but you can find it on the, you know, meetup.com,
right?
Discover Your World Photography.
Well, we'll put a link then in the show notes here. That's great. That's what I want to do for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know what? There's so many other things I want to talk to you about. I think I'm going to have you on again. I think that's what we're going to do.
That'll work.
Because I want to talk to you about Gary, Indiana.
Yep.
I want to talk to you about, I know you're, like you said, an Olympus guy, huge in the mirrorless cameras and everything. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have you on again in the future. I think we're going to do that. How's that sound?
That's fantastic. We'd definitely like to talk about that transition from full frame to mirrorless. That'd be a good 15 minutes in itself.
I think you're right. So where can people find you online?
You can find me right now at Memories by Mike, and then that's .Zenfolio or at Zenfolio.com. If you just pick up Memories by Mike on Google, you're going to come up with everything on there. I'm on Flickr, 500px, you know, on all the sites that way. Of course, Facebook and that too.
You're on it all. Yeah, we'll put links to all those as well then. Mm-hmm. And yeah, thank you so much. I'm going to have to make a trip to Detroit to shoot some of these things with you. I can't wait. And,
that'd be great.
Yeah, and hopefully, actually, I think, now I feel bad about this. You did sign up. You're coming to Out of Chicago Conference, right?
Yes, I'm coming out of Chicago. Got about 4 or 5 others that I'm on the edge of getting them there. So,
well, good. I know
so we can have somebody to drive out together there with.
I know the girls from our trip. You better talk them into it from last weekend.
Yeah, Jennifer.
So.
Yeah, Jennifer for sure.
Exactly.
Those. Yep. So that sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike. It was great talking with you, and we'll see you on next time.
That sounds great, Chris. Thank you.
Well, that was great of Mike to come on the show. He's a really good guy. He's got some awesome photos, and he really knows his way around Detroit, and he knows his way around a lot of places, actually. He's one of those guys that does a lot of research, wants to look the places up, and go to the best places, and not really waste a lot of time, and that's my kind of guy. So, thanks, Mike. Really appreciate it. Segment 3 today. All right, here it is. Of all the places in all of Chicagoland, maybe in all of the world, Well, maybe that's going too far. But in all of Chicagoland, if I could just stay at one place, and I was only allowed to stay at one place and photograph that the rest of my life, it's got to be the Chicago Botanic Garden. And that might sound kind of crazy because I'm really not that big of a flower photographer, if that's the way you're thinking of it. But really, there's so much to shoot at the Botanic Garden. It's not just flowers. You can shoot macro. It could be flower macros. But there's all sorts of things you can shoot up close. You can shoot, of course, flowers. The best part about the garden is that they're constantly changing throughout the seasons. You go there 1 week and it's one thing. Go there the next weekend, it's something totally different. You can walk around the garden. You can shoot all sorts of landscapes. You'd be surprised how much you can get, whether it's around the Japanese islands or out on the prairie, or just anywhere throughout the place. There's all sorts of great landscapes you can shoot. Go at the right time of day, you'll get some wonderful photos. If you go right now, during the spring, you can get migrating birds. It's a great place. You might just be a bird photographer. You'd still go there every day. You're going to get some amazing things. During the summer, look for bugs. You can do macro photography with the bugs. I've spent weeks there just shooting bugs, just trying to get close-ups, and it's a ton of fun. Chicago Botanic Garden's a great place for it. My favorite thing to shoot is architecture, and they actually have a lot of really cool buildings there to shoot, too. You can get inside of them, and some of them are more modern, some of them are older, and there's a great variety of architecture that you can shoot at the garden. And the other thing is there's a lot of sculptures. There's all sorts of art around the garden. So macro, flowers, landscapes, birds, bugs, architecture, art. It's like, am I missing anything? Street photography? Sure, you could shoot the people there. Yeah, I mean, it's everything you'd ever want as far as photography, almost all in one place, and that's at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Now, every Saturday, every first Saturday of the month at 9 a.m., they do a walk. The garden puts on a photography walk. If you meet there at the Regenstein Center at 9 a.m., they get together for a walk, and maybe there'll be 20, 30 people there. You're going to meet some new friends, and you get to go out, and whatever happens to be in bloom, whatever's kind of the thing to shoot at that time of the year, they're going to go do it, and it's a great time. I've done it before. I highly recommend it. It's the first Saturday of each month, and I think it begins at 9 a.m. You can go to the Chicago Botanic Garden site to get details. Sometimes they might meet in a slightly different place or maybe a slightly different time because, of course, the sun's changing when it rises. So if you're looking at that now, June 7th, get out there and do that first walk. That'll be the next first Saturday for that. If you really want to see how you should photograph the garden, there's one person that I recommend, and that is my really good friend, Ann Belmont. She is my favorite flower photographer. She is fantastic. Well, actually, I can think of a couple other flower photographers that I really like too. But the one person that I think knows the Botanic Garden better than anyone else on this earth is Ann Belmont. As far as through a photographer's eye, she is fantastic. If you search for Ann Belmont, A-N-N-E Belmont, on Google, you'll come up to her Zenfolio site and just start looking through it, and you will not want to stop. You'll just keep looking through her photos. They're amazing. When you're in there, look for her 365 project that she's doing. She's got to be to about 355 by now, so she's getting really close to finishing this off. And every single image is phenomenal. And she's not just posting an image a day, she's taking that photo each day. It's great stuff. And each one of them is some sort of a flower photo. And I'm guessing that 95% of them are from the Botanic Garden. She's amazing. So that's Ann Belmont, and look for her photos on her site. Well, you can also look for them on Out of Chicago. She writes for Out of Chicago, and she just did a really good article about photographing the tulips. And by the way, Ann and I led, along with Tony Reynez, we led a really nice photo walk just a few weeks ago. We did a free photo walk at the Botanic Garden. We got a really good turnout, had a ton of fun, and got breakfast after, and it was great. We're going to do it again. I'm not sure when, but it was a lot of fun, and I know that we want to do it again soon. So what are some of my favorite things to photograph in the garden? kind of depends on the season, kind of depends on what's in bloom. Well, in the spring, I'd say it comes down to a couple of things. Well, you may be a little bit too late for it right now, but the biggest thing in the spring is the tulips. They do an amazing job. Tulips wherever you go. You can get close, you can get fields of tulips, you can get one tulip with a whole field of them behind them, all sorts of different compositions that you can get with some wonderful tulips there in the spring. The other thing you'll see is the flowering trees, so the apple blossoms and the cherry blossoms, and that always looks nice. You can get more of a landscape, wider angle shot, the flowering trees in the spring. But the other big one, and this has in the past been my favorite thing to do, is the migrating birds. You're going to see all sorts of stuff. You're going to see a lot of like Baltimore Orioles. You're going to get all sorts of the little, you know, tiny warblers coming through. If you're not a big bird photographer, you may be like, okay, looks like some sparrows. But you check these little warbler things out, and they're tiny. They're beautiful. They have wonderful songs. They're super colorful. I mean, I guess you wouldn't think they're just a sparrow. They're really cool, but you only get them coming through in the spring and maybe a little bit in the fall, but mostly it's that spring migration where you're going to catch those birds coming through the garden. If you're going in the summer, so coming up, you're going to look for water lilies. That's one of the highlights. They've done this the last 2 or 3 years now, a butterfly house. That's awesome for photographers. Butterflies all over the place. Try not to step on them, and you get some fantastic photos in the butterfly house. Also, you can look for butterflies and dragonflies and things like that out in the prairie. And you guys know the tip on that one. You want to go early, early in the morning. There's dew on everything, and it's still chilly, so they're not going to move very fast. They'll pose for your photos. So those are your places to go in the summer. Late summer, also look for the native prairie garden, and you can do the same thing with the butterflies and some of the other bugs in there. And then the winter, actually all times of the year, but especially in the winter, my very favorite place in all the garden is the Japanese islands. And I love them. It's my favorite place to shoot, whether it's the bridges or some of the pagoda type buildings that they have in there. It's a great place. It's my favorite place in the whole garden to shoot. And it obviously they're islands. They're in the middle of the pond. You'll love it. Your camera will love it. And great place to go. And in the winter, it's even better. It's like the most serene thing you can experience. I highly recommend that the next time, if you're close to the Chicago Botanic Gardens and it starts to really snow, let's not talk about that. Hopefully that won't happen again soon. But if it really starts to snow, you head right out to the garden. And those are some of my favorite photos, are as it's snowing at the Botanic Gardens. So that's it, the Chicago Botanic Garden, an amazing place for any type of photographer. I highly recommend you get out there this spring. It's the best time to shoot it, but as we just said, there's wonderful things to see all throughout the year. So that's segments 1, 2, and 3. That leads us to our pick of the week. Now, this one is for people that are going to be going down into Chicago, and I know a lot of people have been using this one. It is spothero.com. Spothero.com is looking for parking spots, and the way that Spot Hero works is that you can search for an area where you'd like a parking spot. It will show you all the spots within, you know, whatever radius you're zoomed into on the map. It will show you, here are all the places near you, and here are their prices, and you can say, okay, I'm going to need it tomorrow between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. And please figure out like where the best places are with the best prices, and it will figure it out for you. You pay for it there, and basically what you do, there's a couple of ways it can work, but you print something out, and you can either put it in the dash of your car, or some of the parking lots you have to go, show it to the attendant, and you'll get in. Or if it's a garage, could be the same sort of thing. But it's really easy, you know exactly where you're going to be going, and usually you get a better rate for getting it through Spot Hero as well. And I've done it probably 6 or 7 times now and haven't had any issues. It's always worked great, and really makes it a whole lot easier than kind of wandering around down there saying, maybe here, maybe here. Okay, that's like $25 to park for the evening. If you don't know, parking in Chicago is expensive. But if you go to Spot Hero, you can always find some kind of deal and get it for $10-$12, something like that. So I highly recommend, if you're going to be going down and looking for a parking space, you use spothero.com. It's a great site, and I think that you'll get a lot of use out of it. So there you go. There's episode 2 in the can, and that is it. Thank you to Mike Boehning for joining us. That was a great interview, and I hope you guys will join us next week for episode 3. We'll keep talking about more Chicago photography. I hope that you join me at the Out of Chicago Conference, June 27th and 28th. I keep saying it's going to be fantastic. It really is. You're going to love it. You're going to get to go on 2 photo walks Friday night, Saturday night, 6 classes, 16 different speakers to choose from. You want to do street photography? You can do almost all street photography. You want to do HDR and cityscapes? You can do almost all that. You want to do architecture and fine art architecture? You can do that. Everyone is there. It's going to be a great weekend, and I hope you don't miss it. It's the Out of Chicago Conference, June 27th and 28th. Go to outofchicago.com/conference to sign up. It's going to be great. All right, thanks for joining me in episode 2, and we will see you next time. We'll be right back.